My name is Phil Golding, and this is The Way Forward. The Way Forward is devoted to helping you be aware of, understand, and live by the essential foundational principles that enable you to overcome suffering and evolve, to become the solution for your own life. These same foundational principles that enable you to master your personal life also apply in the same way on a family, community, national, and international level. Where there is goodwill, loving kindness, compassion, harmony, equity, equality, inclusiveness, justice, integrity, healing, and awakening, these principles will be the enabling factor. So the way forward is also focused on the way forward for humanity and how we can be a part of humanity evolving for the benefit of all beings. Today I will be talking to my good friend Adrian Hall on the subject of taking full ownership of your mind with unconditional acceptance for yourself and all others for the benefit of yourself and others. All right, so welcome Adrian to The Way Forward.
Thanks, Phil.
Have a chat, and you've been on the path for many years and being part of my self-awareness groups for many years. So tell us a little bit about your story, how it began, and maybe tell us how long you've been on your path of consciousness. Let's start with that.
Yeah, so I think I started so to be 2006, so what's that, 18 years ago now?
Right.
Like I had a pretty good upbringing and things. I didn't have any major sort of traumas or any issues like that. I've always been interested in how things work and trying to live life the best I can. Basically, I was going through a few changes and going through divorce. And that was a bit of a shake up to maybe think, you know, things aren't exactly what they seem, or, you know, I wasn't doing as well as I thought or whatever like that. So that probably prompted me a little bit. And, just having a conversation, actually at a work lunch with a guy, and he mentioned men's well-being. I had a bit of a look into that, and they had a common ground starting quite shortly after that, so I went along to the common ground trial and thought it was good, so I signed up to that group. So this was all sort of, you know, all in the space of maybe a couple of months, just signed up, joined the group. While I was at the Common Ground group, the manhood gathering was imminent. They were mentioning that. So myself and one of the other guys that was in the group decided we'd go along to the manhood gathering.
I'll just break in there and just let people know that Men's Wellbeing is an important men's support organisation here in Queensland, and it's now spread around Australia, and very much helping initiating men into their heart and into their awareness, and teaching men how to, you know, truly know how to be authentic and look after themselves and to be a, you know, solution benefit to the community. So it's another aspect of this way forward.
Yeah, so that was, I went to that gathering, and I guess, and that's when I met you at the gathering. I guess I took some of your Five Steps to Freedom, you know, brochures and that, or whatever you had on there, and read that, and it sort of resonated with me, the simplicity of the five steps, and it seemed to, definitely resonated and made sense. And then I thought, oh, that's good. This guy's in Brisbane. And, you know, it's handy if I want to go along. So I guess that's when I contacted you and started coming along to the meditation group.
Yeah. So tell me about, what were you looking for? What were you searching for in doing that?
I like to sort of do my best, I guess, and have the best life I can and understand how things work. And so I guess getting into men's well-being, common ground, and that was a good eye-opener, in particular, men more coming from the heart and being open and honest. So that side of it was a good eye-opener and felt right. And so I guess as I kept going down that journey, yeah, just looking for that way to be open, honest, be the best person I can, have a good peaceful life, I guess. And, develop myself as much as I can. And so, yeah, be around others that are trying to achieve the same thing.
I can break in. One thing that struck me, the men's well-being is a community that's doing its best to be conscious and operate on that in that more inclusive ethos, if you like. And one of the things that really struck me is the unconditional acceptance that I experienced, when I went along to the festivals and started to get involved in the groups. Was that something that you experienced as well?
Yeah, definitely. I felt that, yeah, certainly in common ground, and then obviously at a greater level in the gathering with a lot more people. We're talking about 100 plus men in those gatherings, so that was a bit of an eye opener. But that, yeah, certainly the inclusiveness. I really like the way everyone's just there to do their best. And, it's non-judgmental, very supportive. Everyone just chips in. I mean, one of the things that I still remember is, I guess, when you have meals, how quickly the room gets set up and packed away because, everyone just does their little bit. I guess that gave me a really good insight to teamwork at that level, and no one's pushed to do it. They just do it because they know it's the right thing and they like helping out. So it's just this sort of inclusive, yeah, like I said, doing your best, helping out, just supporting each other and doing what you need to. There's no set, apart from the respectful guidelines, which is, a very important framework to set up. But other than that, it's really just being yourself and like you said, non-judgment, acceptance of yourself, acceptance of others, and allowing others to run their journey as what works for them. And similarly, you're in control of your journey and you run it how you want.
There's
Yeah,
something
that's
about the festivals, and just the festivals or the men's gatherings usually attract, 100, 150 guys. Usually end up at a base out in the country somewhere and convention type of center. Your defenses, I know my defenses just melted away. It's like just all these trucks were backing in and being filled up with guys' defenses and shame and all that stuff and just carting it away. It had that such an embracing atmosphere that helped facilitated to be able to let go and to be able to be real and be yourself and know that you're not going to be judged. Because this guy's just going to be telling his story the same. And I'm getting a bit emotional. I'm tapping back into that. And it's a very healing space, isn't it? To be in that space of, unconditional acceptance, goodwill, cooperation. And you mentioned the observing how the men behaved, at mealtime and everyone just pitched in. It was like, there was no question about it. That was the atmosphere, that was the community. You just stepped up and did your bit. Yeah, that goodwill cooperation then just made a very light load of it all. Everyone was lifted up, everyone helps out.
Yeah, that was my, like I said, I still remember that. And I guess that saying, you know, many hands make light work, that was something I really took out of that, just watching that. And even doing it isn't an effort. Everyone's just chipping in and grateful to be there, happy that they can help out where needed. It's just a very, different sort of space than.
That's right. Yeah, no one's making us do that, hey. This is just it's simply the environment that the principles that are running, that organization and the way we put those things together motivates us to be different than when we're back in society with all the competition and the exploitation and the survival of the fittest kind of mentality, which seems to be increasing of late. And where we've got to be on guard and defensive and competing, different reality, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I think setting up those guidelines for respectful communication was really important as well. You know, it all makes sense when you get told those guidelines and you get a bit of time to practice them in the common ground groups or at the gatherings. I've had my own men's group that ran for a long period of time, so. But I think those guidelines are very important too, and
What are those guidelines? What do you recall? Just off the top of your head, what are those guidelines?
well, they're mostly around respectful communication. So, you
Because
know, most.
the reason I'm highlighting all this is that these are all like we go to the festival and that there's this space that is cultivated. But I guess what we're talking about here is there is no reason why when we go back home, it can't be the same. There's no reason why society can't operate in this way as well. So there's what we're doing with this conversation is highlighting the principles that enable such an experience to occur, enable men who are usually in a competition kind of space and have a lot of defenses and walls up to come into a space and feel that they can let all that go. And I've obviously run the what's called the affinity group or tribal group at the festival, where you get assigned to a group like a family group, if you like, that you keep coming back to share and to work through stuff that you've been experiencing at the festival. And I've noticed that when I have a couple of new guys in my group, they're just beginning the festival experience, and they're still pretty uptight and they're not sure what to expect because often it's an environment most men haven't really experienced before, which is sad in itself. But by the end of it, they're transformed. They're so open, they're inspired, they're excited that it's something that they've been able to really feel what it's like to be open and included and embraced and safely have your heart open. So you can just simply watch the guys transform and have this shift and awakening and want to go home and try to keep that going.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you asked about those principles. I guess the main ones, if I, think about it, are, they also had the concept of the talking stick, which was whoever held the stick, spoke and everyone else listened. So I guess it's that first principle that one person talks at a time, which is obviously very important. We don't have people, shouting over the top and things like that, which is obviously the first key to allowing people to talk freely, knowing that they can talk, finish what they have to say, and no one else interrupts them.
And let's just look at that, to be truly heard. And learning to actually listen, where you're holding the space for the person who's talking and they've got time to, to talk out whatever they want to talk out. And again, it's not a competition. It's not who can say the smartest thing, or, it's just simply, again, an opportunity to be real and be held as you're being real. And like I'm as a therapist specializing in trauma and stress and depression and looking back and understanding the woundedness that we received as a child that leads to those sorts of experiences, and understanding what heals that, and there's nothing we want more as that child than being heard, being seen, being existing, being noticed. It's like as a child, we don't not sure whether we have permission to be in this space, like forever asking. That child, I think, is still in us, still unsure whether we're going to be accepted, and to be truly listened to, and to truly know how to listen, and to be able to share without interruption, is, I think, such an important experience of acceptance. It's important, it's the foundation of counseling, really. But why should it only be in the counseling space? These are healthy communication skills that Carl Rogers put forward in the active listening. And so, therefore, being able to talk without being interrupted and to be truly heard is one of the important things. What else was there?
Obviously, one of the main other aspects is, confidentiality, and what's said in the circle stays in the circle. So that's obviously a real important one, for people to be able to speak openly, knowing that what they're saying is just held in confidentiality in that group, and that, it won't get out somewhere else. So it enables them, like you were saying, to drop. That's one of the main things that enables you to drop your defenses. Even if you say, you don't have to worry about, am I saying the right or wrong thing? Am I, going to get myself into trouble? Is it going to offend someone? All of that is effectively based, around that confidentiality. And I guess the other bits around that is the eye language that, I can speak for myself, say what it.
Let's take them one at a time. That's what you were talking about before is really important. And when we're talking about going back to normal society, and that's not something that you can, even in a healthy society, like you're at the festival and it's a very healthy space, but here we've now created a smaller, much more intimate space where that affinity group or tribal group is like a family space of that unconditional acceptance, but we're all got each other's back, if you like. And it's a space where we can all have the right to be human and to talk about stuff that we may not necessarily feel comfortable talking about in a general conversation. Situation, hey. So, we may have, made some serious mistakes. Being an abuser in a relationship, or being abused, or being sexually abused as a man, which is extremely difficult to share, and anything like that, that we may have gone bankrupt, or things that are very difficult to talk about. That affinity group creates that space. We're all there equal in our humanity, no matter what our experience, and we can share that without being judged, without, and also without someone trying to fix us. There's no giving advice either, is there, in that circle? And it's about being able to share, listen to other men's sharing. I may have some experience to give to someone, but I, even as the group leader, I share from my experience. I share my story. That's very much a 12-step program principle as well.
Yeah, That's right. That's, I guess, what you're saying there with you're sharing your story, and not giving advice. That was the next bit we were going to, which is the I language.
I statements, yeah, owning what we're sharing.
Owning what we're sharing, I can say, what it is for me. Someone else can say what it is for them. I don't have to worry. If I don't agree with them, I don't have to say that. Cause again, with that openness and respectful communication, I know that I can have my view and others don't have to agree. Others can have their view. I don't have to agree with that. And that is a very, important concept to take into any, like you said, all these techniques. We take them back into our life, and if we communicate like that, I mean, I've certainly learned a lot about that and instigated those communication techniques in my daily life, and it certainly makes life a lot better. And I know I'm being true to myself and true to others, understanding and practicing those concepts.
And so you're saying being true to yourself and true to others, let's unpack that. You know, what is the strength of that principle, if you like, of owning your story? You know, and we have a habit, and we often need to remind each other when we're sharing in the group. You know, we start to, revert back to talking on a you basis, or they, or them, or you, rather than I. And but when we drop back into, you know, this is my story, I'm feeling this, and I thought that, and it drops you into a much deeper level of personal responsibility, owning it, and you're really feeling it, and you're looking at it much more deeply as you're sharing. But at the same time, that is made far more comfortable because of the acceptance that's being promoted and demonstrated. So that enables us to be able to face ourselves without that judgment, and own it much more. Much more deeply, much more directly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and like you said, I can own my stuff a lot better if I don't have to convince everyone else or know that everyone else has to agree as well. It's a lot of a simpler concept. And also, if I'm listening to someone else, it's a lot easier just to listen and more just, hold space for them and hear what they have to say with an open heart and mind. Because I know that I don't have to agree with it. And if it's triggering me because I don't agree with it, I just hold that space for myself, knowing, well, that trigger is my thing. I'll look at why I'm being triggered by what they're saying, but I don't react to it, which allows me to hold space for them, but also allows me to look at my own side and take my own lessons and learn. Learn from those triggers.
That's one aspect, but I found more, let's say 80% of the time, what they're saying is telling my story in some way. You know, so I'm able to look more deeply into myself and reflect into my own story, my own journey, the other person's sharing, just as they're being able to look more deeply and reflect into their story as they're telling it, you know, because that's bringing it out into awareness as we're doing that, and we're able to really start to process naturally in that atmosphere, hey.
Yeah, that's right.
And so there's those two principles of the 5-step process that I used that you mentioned earlier. And the step one is acceptance, which is to me the key that opens the heart. You know, that unconditional acceptance in a relationship, the honeymoon period is so wonderful because that's unconditional acceptance.
Yeah.
That's the embracing, that's being able to open and let go. That's that acceptance. You know, it's like being like a kid, you know, being embraced in your mum's arms and feeling really safe. And then you can, you know, be honest about what you stole or.
Yeah, that's right. As a parent as well, understanding that as well. I know that's one thing, my mum mentioned that to me, when I was an adult, that she knew that, to have our trust, you have to be able to not react even if she was shocked or something, not react to what we were saying, because
Yeah.
knowing that that would hold our trust. So that's that acceptance, side of it.
Yeah, these are important life skills for, for a safe environment, isn't it? So the other principle, the second step of the five-step process, is personal responsibility, which is not an easy concept to step into straight up, because there's a lot of baggage that often comes with that notion of personal responsibility. It's like
Yes.
you should be responsible. It's like, someone outside you imposing something on you, or you're going to be judged. But when it's connected to unconditional acceptance, it becomes a very different thing, doesn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Instead of something that's a bit scary, it creates an opportunity for healing. Because we can't heal something unless we're facing it. I can't heal my mind unless I'm owning it. I can't mentor someone unless I'm paying attention to them. And so owning the mind is quite essential for bringing it into the awareness. So if I don't own it, I can't be aware of it.
That's right. And then, the personal responsibility side to, like you said, I have to accept it to allow it in. But then the next bit is I have to take responsibility for my part in that to actually enable change to occur.
Yeah, but the acceptance transforms that into an opportunity to heal.
Yeah.
That personal responsibility becomes an opportunity to grow, to evolve, to mature. And so it becomes opportunity, an exciting adventure. I think you would agree with me that once you get to a certain level of experience in being able to often process and integrate, it becomes quite exciting. You feel the power of that, and you start looking for the next bit of vulnerability that you can access, that you can drop into.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's a very important aspect. Like you said, once they've started to do it and feel the power of, that transformation, it does change the view. And then, yeah, I'm not afraid to step in as much, and just knowing that whatever happens is just a mirror to a trigger that then gives me an opportunity to address that and improve myself a bit further. So, like you were just saying, rather than being scared of it or trying to run away from it, you do actually be thankful for having the experience to enable you to see that part of yourself that heal.
So this is a transformational aspect of it, isn't it? Those two principles that we experienced in the men's festivals and the groups that we run or participate in that are held by those two principles of, unconditional acceptance and personal responsibility. In other words, ultimately it's the foundation is my personal responsibility to accept myself unconditionally. And when I can do that, whenever I'm triggered, that's no longer a problem that I've got to, my fight or flight self has got to look at something outside me as the cause of that. I can see that what's outside is just triggering me, but the cause is my own thought structures, my own conditioning, my own woundedness that is already there. And so the trigger through the gateway of these two essential foundational principles enables us to turn around and see the content of that trigger as a window, a doorway, where we can take our own compassion into our own mind. Hey,
Yeah, that's right.
we become our own parent. A parent learning how to be wise and awake, as like how you described how your mother was able to hold that space for you, and what she knew was very important.
That's right, yeah. Which I think she said was passed down from her mother.
Yeah.
And Yeah, but I guess, yeah, like we're saying, having the group experiences takes that to another level.
And the
Because
wonderful thing is we can learn it at a time, even though we may not have received that in our childhood. You know, that this the space of a conscious community that's foundation is based on those principles can create that same healing space where we're able to be in the present moment with all our memories, with all our conditioning, with all our wounds that are there in that space. Even if they weren't held back then, they can be held now in the space now, because all the past we carry with us wherever we go, hey? All our memories and conditioning is all here now in our own consciousness.
Yeah.
All there, available to be healed to captive audience. One of the reasons why understanding personal responsibility is so empowering, because you know, if we're stuck with still blaming the world outside us, which we do as a kid, because, you know, as a kid, we are generally a victim, aren't we? Because we're not in control of our environment or our life, and we're depending on other people to care for us and hold the space for us. But now that we're an adult, we're the ones who need to be doing that for ourselves and the world around us.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the... Yeah, those two foundational principles of acceptance and responsibility. Like, just as we're talking about it, as I'm contemplating on that, and looking, you know, at the problems of society, that personal responsibility, you know, seems to be such a deep, deep problem that we have. We don't know how to take responsibility. We don't know how to own our own mind. And, you know, when we look at leadership out in the world of politics, and we're not getting into politics, we're just looking at it in terms of quality of leadership, why we lose such respect on one level for our leaders, but on the other level, we don't know how to choose the right leader. You know, we end up choosing the one that, you know, that talks the most and beats their chest and seems to be able to put the others down the most effectively, but that's not necessarily a quality of good leadership. That's just, you know, who's got the biggest ego. And so that personal responsibility, understanding that, truly understanding it, and understanding it as a transformational power that enables us to move ourselves into our higher levels of consciousness to become the solution for our own self, and in turn a solution for, you know, the world around us. And so the personal responsibility, the judgment is completely taken out of it with the unconditional acceptance, isn't it? It becomes something that we're not used to regarding as personal responsibility.
Yeah, I think the other key too with personal responsibility is, if I take personal responsibility and you take personal responsibility, then I know I'm not responsible for your, you know, the way you take things as well. So it creates that openness. But yeah, I feel like it's very, for me, it's a very much an empowerment thing.
Yeah.
That we're empowered as individuals to own our stuff, but we don't have to feel responsible for everyone else. As long as we do our part and we behave correctly and respectfully towards others, that's all I need to do. And then if others get triggered, that's their business. And I think that's an important one. Well, it is for me, because obviously we're, you know, as humans, we're quite varied with our things, and you can't cover everyone's bases. So just knowing to take responsibility, you know, for myself, and allowing others to take it for themselves.
Yeah, that's right. So, the space gets cleaned up so much, because, you know, we're no longer projecting our fears and insecurities onto one another, are we?
Mm-hmm.
We are taking responsibility. We are owning our own fears and insecurities, but we can do that because unconditional acceptance. When I'm pointing that to myself, I'm accepting myself. But it's not self-indulgence because I'm taking responsibility for what's there. I'm not blaming anybody else. I'm not expecting anyone else to do anything about it other than for them to have integrity. And that's what we're talking about here, isn't it? It's genuine integrity. And so with that acceptance, I can look at my own stuff, but then become my own compassionate parent and be my own mentor. And so I've now learned to hold the space for my own wounds and the confusion that comes out of those wounds. And so I'm not judging that confusion, but I'm not identifying with it anymore either. I'm identifying now with unconditional acceptance and personal responsibility. That becomes a baseline of observation, doesn't it? I'm observing myself now from that perspective, which then is the opposite to everything in my own mind that causes me to suffer and causes me to participate in conflict in the world around me.
Extremely important, and it simplifies the communication because I focus on myself and allow others to focus on them. Whereas I think when you take personal responsibility out of it, it becomes more the opposite. You're responsible for making me feel this way, and I'm responsible for making you feel this way. And if we can't even take it for ourselves, how would we expect to be able to, like, it's impossible, right? To know what's going on for someone else and to predict how you're going to affect them. So when you start to think of it that way, you sort of see that it's illogical.
That just creates endless melodrama or samsara, as they call it in the East. Well, there doesn't seem to be any solutions because approaching life in that way, simply there aren't any solutions, that it continually perpetuates one problem after another. Nothing is being healed or brought into clarity. So this brings us to a challenging perspective, which I bring up in my groups and really struck powerfully in when I'm running a workshop at the Men's Festival, for instance, is to put it out there that we are 100% responsible for our suffering, that our mind is 100% the cause of our suffering. And that's a challenging thing to consider because it brings up again so much of that self-judgment thing. And it also highlights how important that unconditional acceptance is of you, of me, as a way to move past the judgment and then start to find clarity in what is really going on. So what that's saying is that's not the circumstances and conditions that are around us that are causing. This is so important to understand in relationships, isn't it? Because you're not causing my suffering, even if you're having a bad day or you've got a lot of confused conditioning and you're projecting a lot of hate or fear or anger onto me. Or you're only triggering what's going on. And even if this is a whole new experience and that's bringing up, let's say, new emotions and things like that, I am the awareness looking after my own mind, that it's my opportunity to learn how to manage what is going on in my own mind. So you're not causing my suffering, you're triggering confusions within me. And often confusions about my own beliefs around my self-worth and things like that. And so, in that most empowered perspective, you just gave me a wonderful opportunity to observe how I'm unsure about my own worth, about my own being.
That's right, it turns it around, doesn't it? It becomes, instead of becoming a problem, it becomes an opportunity. And that's sort of what I was saying before. At the point when I sort of get that, I then became thankful for the triggers, not resentful of them.
That doesn't mean that if you're so confused that you can't stop being abusive, I'm not going to put up a boundary. I'm going to clearly put up a boundary and make space between us because my first responsibility is to look after this guy here, my own human self. I've got to provide a sanctuary for him in order to live a balanced and harmonious life. But I don't have to judge you to make that boundary. I can recognize your level of confusion, and that level of confusion means that you're not in a position to be able to face that with perspective and self-reflect. Therefore, you're lost in that confusion, which means you're not in a position to have a functional relationship at this time. And I have no control over when and where you're going to be able to do that, if you're ever going to be able to do that in this life. So I've got to, let go of that relationship, because I can't have one with you unless you can be operating on those two foundational principles, which is integrity, which is the very thing that enables a functional relationship, whether it's in an intimate relationship, personal friendship, community, international relations. It's the same principles that guide all those levels of relationship. What do you think?
I totally agree. That side of it really important and enables me to have good relationships or to build good relationships by first understanding that principle myself and then acting from that space. And by doing that, I own my stuff, see things as triggers to myself, which are opportunities for me. And at the same time, if someone else blames me, I reflect to them that I consider that to just be a trigger for them, and that's something for them to look at. So I guess in that way, I've probably been able to have better relationships where I can take that responsibility but also help others. So yeah, I'm owning my stuff, admitting to it, admitting to my triggers, owning my stuff, but at the same time setting boundaries with others, which helps me but ultimately helps them as well.
Yeah,
Because
that's a very important point that you made just there, that the boundaries is about your own self-care. It's not about an animosity toward the other person. It's not about punishing them. It is set, because you're taking responsibility for your own self-care. That's coming from the heart. And that is informing us the appropriate, extent of that boundary, and we're going to be able to set it and communicate that boundary in a way that is non-judging, not attacking. And in my experience, when we, are able to say, I can't do that anymore. This is not appropriate for me. I need to move on. The other person may be triggered and may try to bait us or whatever, but when we can understand that they're confused and have a compassion for their confusion, not judge them for it, but we can still be rock solid in that boundary and simply not be reacting to their confusion, but to set that boundary and then act on that boundary, move on. And I've found that that gets the most respect. It has a much cleaner, more decisive power to it. And that the other person, confused person's ego, doesn't have a lot to grasp onto. And they eventually, they may not like it, but they realize they have to let go. And but like you say, when it's from the heart, it's for my highest good, but there's a universal aspect too, because it's coming from a level of consciousness that has an interconnectedness about it, and that has a common good about it. And so even though you don't like it, you only don't like it because you don't know how to take responsibility. And so it's a nudge for you in that direction. I'm not doing it to manipulate you in that direction. I'm doing it to take care of me on the, on that higher consciousness level. But it's the best thing for you too, because it's saying it's not appropriate to be abusive and to treat people in that way. So I'm not enabling it, and I'm putting up a boundary and saying no to that. And that's the most compassionate and appropriate thing for your well-being as well, isn't it?
I think, like I mentioned there too, and I think you mentioned, like effectively, it's a universal thing. So the other person that's being triggered, in my experience, Even though there'll be a trigger reaction in the moment. If I come from that higher place, the other person in time actually sees that and respects that boundary and does take ownership of their part, and therefore it helps them as well.
Yeah.
And then therefore that makes it even more empowering because I know when I'm doing it, it's helping me and it's helping them. It's not
Then,
like I'm not doing something for my benefit that's harming them. It's helping both of us at the higher level.
that's right. All righty. So, we're talking about the importance of, the acceptance and personal responsibility in terms of human relations and how that, if understood, how to approach those two principles and start living those two principles that can transform your own relationship with yourself and your own awareness and transform, our own relations with other people as well. So looking back at our, at our men's work, men's festivals experience, we can see if you can reflect on, how that whole thing unfolds, how the whole, way that the men's well-being movement in the festivals and groups is based on those two principles, which, makes it work as well as it does.
Yeah, well, I guess that's like we were saying before around the respectful communication guidelines. They're basically anchored on those principles.
Yeah, there's a process called nonviolent communication. It doesn't have a very positive title, and so it turns people off a bit often when I mention it to them. Oh, I'm not a violent communicator. Yeah. But
Which is the judgment, right? Well,
yeah, that's right. But
yeah.
yeah, good if they gave it a positive title, but nonetheless, it talks about all of this stuff. It was actually first developed for statesmen dealing with negotiations on an international stage, dealing with all sorts of personalities and egos and levels of integrity. And and so clearly it's been tested out in very difficult environments. And but they realized that, hang on, this is all universal, these principles. This works on every level. And it's exactly what we're talking about here. There is a physics to this. There is a physics to how to be conscious and to how to bring that consciousness into relationships, into community, into leadership. And, and if we understood those principles and each got on with doing our best to live them and learn and grow through those principles, if everyone focused on doing that, we could. Humanity would be transformed in 10 years' time because you and I know what it, how the level of transformation that we've made in our own lives by knuckling down and focusing on these principles and putting them in our own life, how that has, has transformed our own life.
Yeah, exactly. So realize how illogical it is for doing the opposite, right? When you're
Yeah.
believing that the external is what's controlling you and that you're responsible for others and they're responsible for you,
Yeah.
and instead of perpetual cycle. So the simplicity of bringing it back to yourself and allowing others to do that is, yeah, extremely important. Like you said, you can start to make some real inroads there because you're now flowing with the, yeah, like you're saying, the physics, I guess.
Yeah. So how do we, in practical terms, put these principles into the world? How do we do that? We're just these little individuals and when we look out in the world, I'm not seeing it evolve in a real hurry. I thought it was going to take a nice shift forward, but suddenly, oh, seemed to lurch backwards again. And so we're not getting anywhere fast. And that can be disappointing. That can be disillusioning. And I certainly got disillusioned for a few weeks. Because I got caught into expectations of where I thought things were going to go. And I had to let that go and realize, right, well, that's just what is. That is where we're at. That's the environment. That's like how I had to learn to be with myself when I started healing. The acceptance enabled me to go, right, there's no point in me wishing I was somewhere else. And there's no point in me beating myself up for being where I was. This was my starting point today. This is what I have to work with. So I had to accept it, embrace it, and start to get into it. And I suffered suicidal depression when I was 20, and that chronic depression kept going. And that's what drove me into doing inner work. And I was turning around and accepting that and starting to get into it, own it, and have a relationship with it, which was the beginning of my journey. And so, what can you and I do in practical terms?
I think it comes back acceptance of ourselves, acceptance of others, taking personal responsibility for our triggers, and setting those boundaries and helping others see and accept their triggers. So, I mean, that's the summary, I guess. And, for me, that's just about living those principles in daily life with ourselves and all the interactions that we have. I know for me, it feels when I'm sort of in that right space, I feel empowered and I feel like I'm empowering others. And, I can only do what's around me. So if I focus first on myself and then put that out to others around me, which I feel empowers others around me, then I can influence my small circle of influence. And then ideally those others around me will learn and grow as well, and they'll influence theirs. And then it becomes an expanding outwards process, I guess, if the more people that operate in that space then becomes the domino effect. So I think it's really important in this, and I know for myself, and I've seen it certainly in others, and you just mentioned it there to realize that, we can't control the world, and but what we can control is ourselves and our interactions, and therefore always focus on I do the thing that I know is right, but I can't control what everyone else is doing, and I need to let go of that.
What we can do is invite, inspire, and encourage, isn't it? We can be that example. First thing, like you were saying, is take ownership of your own mind, being your own healer, sanctuary, mentor. Try to be your potential as much as you possibly can. Be the solution for yourself. And then from there, be the solution to those around you in terms of the way you interact with them and engage them.
Yeah, that's right.
So you're being an example of what works, of what
Yeah.
is actually being a solution to the problems of humanity.
Yep, that's exactly right. And I guess as humans, we do learn from example and observation, probably one of our main ways of learning, right?
Yeah.
And I think it comes, like we were saying too, it resonates at that heart level. Probably another way of talking about what you're doing there, saying there with examples. I know myself, if I'm looking at examples of people behaving really well, I can see and feel that and be inspired by it. So that gives me inspiration to know that when I'm doing it, I'm not only helping myself, I'm setting an example that can inspire others.
Comes back to what we were talking about in the tribal groups at our festival, that intimate space of when you were, saying that, one of the other guys may be sharing something that you don't agree with or that, you may be challenged by, let's say, but we're showing them acceptance. We're not judging them. We're allowing them to have their human journey. And I think that is very important in terms of being the solution out in the world? Because from what I'm seeing, there seems to be an increasing level of dichotomy where you've got, one group of people seeing that this is the way, another group of people seeing that's the way, and they're becoming less and less common ground between them. And we're seeing that in America now. And again, I don't want to be getting into the politics, but just purely psychology of it, that gets dangerous because there doesn't become a situation where common ground can be worked out, and that's where conflict and violence can start to occur because there's no acceptance. There's not enough of that acceptance where we can find the common ground and find that mutual or integrity that is universal, that actually works. But as someone who is conscious, and I've gained even more clarity about that over the last month or so, is it so essential not to get caught into animosity, not to get caught into arguing, trying to again control other people? I think being conscious, the imperative is to try to avoid that situation occurring. And by being an example of that goodwill and cooperation and compassion and acceptance of those who may be in that state of confusion, you can at least be showing them a different way and not being caught into the same judging and blaming, and we've got to have a victim, and we're not getting caught into that, so we're not promoting that, we're not making that worse. We're instead showing that there's an alternative, and we can be interacting with, those people, if you like, with respect and love. We're literally can show them the example and not think we have to be right. We're not to let go of having to change their mind, other than offering them an example of what actually works, being that example. Telling our own story of what worked for us,
Yeah, look, I think that's a really good point, and it's only our part and showing that as an example, knowing that we're not there, it's not our responsibility to fix someone else.
That's
It is
right.
to show them the example. And I know the term I use quite a bit is, I can plant a seed that may grow later on. But my job is to plant the seed, which is be the example. In terms of that growing, that's, someone else's business. And I'm in control of that.
And even if the other person is seeing things in terms of judgment and being a victim and being in conflict, I don't have to see it as conflict. I don't have to be involved in that conflict. They may be judging me, putting me down, trying to bait me. I don't have to take that bait. I don't have to think I'm better than them, or I can have compassion instead for their confusion. Confusion simply meaning that what they're doing is causing themselves suffering. It doesn't have to be causing me suffering, even though it may not be comfortable, but I don't have to take it in as that, because I own my own mind. I own my own worth. I own my own well-being. So I can offer back something very different. So they're offering this, I can offer that. Which may be something that we want and they don't actually know how to get there.
I mean, I think you raised a good point too, in that you don't have to buy into that. So even if they're baiting you, you take the bait. You're not feeding that energy perpetuated. Because eventually, even if they're baiting you, if you're not taking the bait, they'll get sick of it pretty quickly.
That's right.
Because you're not feeding.
The more, in my experience, and I know it's the same for you, that the more I've taken responsibility for my own reactions, the more I see my reactions come from my own insecurities, my own, doubt about my own worth, and so on. And the more I learn to accept myself in a self-responsible way, and to become my own foundation, the less I'm influenced by other people's judgments, because I can recognize, as with myself in the past, if I attack somebody, it's because I was first on some level attacking myself, my own worth, and I was holding them responsible for my worth. So if someone's attacking me now, I know that they're purely attacking me out of the inner conflict that they are having with themselves. It's got nothing to do with me. So I don't have to participate or make that energy real in a way. I don't have to be part of that energy exchange. I can offer a very different energy that may perhaps disarm the situation. I can show them acceptance. I can show them patience and compassion. And through not reacting, you know, if the person doesn't really be wanting to be abusing me, but they're just scared and vulnerable and they don't know any other way, but when I'm not attacking back, when I'm holding the space for them and showing them compassion, trying to listen to their message rather than the abuse, my ego is not there for their ego, fear-based ego, to be a victim and grasp and get relief out of that. But they're not feeling judged either. So in a way, they're left with their own inappropriate abusive words ringing in their own ears, and they've got nothing, no other sound in that space. But because I'm, you know, not judging them, but being compassionate towards them, and I've observed this over and over again, that that actually can help the person let go of their fight or flight, their fear reactions, and feel comfortable that they can drop their defenses. It's not a dangerous space.
Yeah.
And so they can be open to a different way of interacting. So paradoxically, we have an enormous power in how to influence the environment around us, but it's not a fear-based, it's being in control of our own self from a higher consciousness perspective, which then can have a positive influence on those around us, eh?
Yes, that's right. You know, with that acceptance, where I'm accepting myself, I'm also accepting them, and therefore I more have empathy for them. And when I'm having empathy for them, the last thing I want to do is invoke the situation, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know that the best thing for me and for them, not buy into it.
Yeah. And again, that's the crux, isn't it? Because you know now how to look after your own humanness, you know how to be your own sanctuary and that, and your own mentor, your own manager. You know, these are all qualities of self-mastery. And because of that, you can make decisions that are going to be the best for the other person, because you can have empathy, because you've accepted your own humanness. You've accepted your own flaws, fears, insecurities. You can see them in the other person. You can see them in the same way, hey?
Yeah.
You know, I can see that they're just like me. They have the same human flaws and fears and insecurities. And if I don't judge myself, well, then it makes sense not to judge them either, because they couldn't help it any more than I could.
That's right.
It's not their fault that they don't yet have the awareness. I can, you know, be an example of that awareness that may help them, you know, experience that and see a different way.
Yeah, exactly right.
But there's another level of what we can do in the world, and that is support one another who are conscious, because it's easy to get discouraged and despondent and isolate ourselves, you know, particularly when our heart is open and we can really feel what's going on world and in the community. It's very important. I think it's even more imperative now that we are creating and supporting and involving ourselves in conscious communities to support one another and to help each other not get caught up in those conflict situations, not to think that we have to be in a fight, but we can, like I say, be representing something that generally works and can be offering ourselves in the community in that compassionate way of integrity, that as a way. And I think from those conscious communities, we can support people who want to step into community leadership positions, who can really consciously operate on the right principles and to be able to handle those in the political arena with all the lack of integrity that goes on there, and they can handle themselves with poise, and integrity. That is so imperative in the world that it's not enough to just be sitting back and saying, well, I know I'm conscious and aware, I'm not being part of the problem, but we also got to be an active part of the solution as well, as much as we can. So I think coming together in conscious communities is very important in regards to supporting and encouraging and seeing what we can do on a collective level, eh? And that brings us back full circle to why, the men's well-being experiences have been powerful. And that's just one type of conscious community, but there can be all sorts of different types of conscious community that involve themselves, in different ways. The men's well-being is purely about initiating men in their heart. I'm certainly aware that the men who are transformed through that experience and ongoingly supported in that organization are then empowered to go out and do their own thing in the world that is of service orientated and heart orientated, and they are making a difference. And so, like you say, there is a catalyst effect. And the more conscious we are that that is the case, the more we can organize ourselves in a way where we're supporting one another but making a difference as well. The way forward. Thank you for your experience. Thank you very much for participating in the conversation. And thank you, Adrian. And may you continue to be a wonderful example of being conscious and a man of integrity in this world.
Thanks, Phil, and appreciate everything you do out there in the community to encourage us all to go and show us the way. So much appreciated.